Chapter 13. Falling Angels. The strength of your enemy is also his weakness. Marshall Stratagems, 123rd Maxim.
I am, I confess, uneasy with the suggestion, said Titus Prato.
I understand, Gilliman nodded. Then you refuse?
I do not refuse orders, my lord, Prato responded quickly.
It is not that kind of order. It is a request that you could choose to deny.
Prato looked at his commander. They were alone in the residency, out of earshot of even Gorod and the Terminator bodyguard, and out of mindshot of any psyker.
I would neither deny a request, my lord, said Prato.
But I put you in a difficult position.
Prato nodded.
I am not sure I want to spy on the mind of a Primarch.
I'm sure you're in my mind all the time, Titus, smiled Gilliman.
No, lord. Surface thoughts only, and only then when they are too bright for me to screen them out. I never pry, unless invited.
Then perhaps I should not presume and explain my thinking to you in words, said Gilliman.
He sat down and stared out of the repaired window ports at the distant glimmer of the new star.
We stand on the brink. Imperium Secundus needs a figurehead to unite it. I had postponed that choice, for it had to be a Primarch, and I was the only Primarch present. It was unseemly.
No one would have refuted you, lord, said Prato.
It would have been unseemly, Gilliman insisted. I prayed for a loyal brother to be delivered through the storm. When all hope seemed extinguished, I resigned myself to taking the regency with all the humility I could gather. Then the lion appeared.
You would declare him your regent?
Of course.
But you don't trust him?
Yes, I do, no matter how closely he plays his secrets. The problem is, I don't believe he trusts me. If I am going to let him in, Titus, if I am going to declare him into a position of power that I cannot undo, I have to be sure of his agenda. Once he has been ratified as regent, we cannot unseat him if we are disappointed by the character he reveals.
Not without insurrection, said Prato.
Which we will avoid, for reasons of toxic irony, if nothing else. I need to know his mind, Titus.
I see, my lord. We are essentially vetting the new master of mankind.
Prato rubbed the bridge of his nose thoughtfully.
It is difficult, he said. It is as with the wolves, only on a greater scale. Like the wolves, the noble lion undoubtedly understands the authority of the Edict of Nicaea. The Librarius of the Ultramarines is already evidence that you are prepared to overrule the word of the Emperor. If I am caught probing his mind...
Will you be caught?
I will endeavour not to be. At the Feast of Hosts tonight, I will use the background rush of many minds in company to get close. Understand, I do not know his capabilities, and he is famously closed. Also,
yes,
there has been odd activity this afternoon. At least two incidents were detected by the Astra Telepathica during the parade. We are still processing their findings, but it is possible that one or more powerful minds are at liberty in the precinct of the city.
Gilliman nodded.
Keep me appraised. Titus, if you can tell me that the lion trusts me sufficiently, I will declare him. He is the only choice, unless you can tell me that poor Vulcan... is no longer insane.
I cannot, lord.
I do not care which, Titus, said Gilliman. Search the mind of one Primarch or heal the mind of the other, whichever is easiest, whichever serves us best.
The surface, that was the next goal.
Kurz dropped feet first, a flutter of crow shadows, and landed at the bottom of a deep extraction vent overlooking one of the Invincible Reason's 8 massive dispersal decks. Below him, like seeds ready to be sown, hundreds of drop pods were loaded in their cradles over the chutes to the void hatches. He could commandeer one and drop... No. A vision came, and it was firm, an undeniable reflection. Gilliman City was protected from aerial and orbital assault by field screens and vast automated batteries. In his mind's eye, Kurz saw a single drop pod falling. Its descent was rapid, but not rapid enough. Detection systems awoke. Orspecs trembled. Fire control systems calculated intercept. A spear of green energy from the surface struck the diving pod and converted it into an expanding cloud of fire and fluttering debris. Another vision, slipping in and overlapping the first, showed him that a similar fate awaited any ship or lander that attempted planetfall without the correct code signal. But the codes wouldn't resolve in his mind. He imagined that they were being randomly generated on a minute-by-minute basis. A third vision showed him the pointlessness of trying for the teleport assemblies. The Lion had ensured that they were all deactivated to prevent exactly that kind of escape route. The Lord of Night bared his teeth and whined. How could one man get to the surface? How could one man... Another vision. Kurz smiled. One man... could not. They were still hunting for him on the upper decks of the flagship. Kurz had wearied of the killing and had slipped away, leaving false trails and brutal traps to delay and occupy his would-be captors. No one suspected that he could have reached the dispersal decks in the ship's belly so quickly. Kurz slid out of the vent base and slunk along the side of the vast deck, using the shadows of the great stanchions and kinetic brace beams. He was moving parallel to the lines of drop pods in their cradle framework. He studied them carefully, checking their status, though this only confirmed what the visions had shown to him. He was far from alone on the dispersal deck. Launch control was a large operations room overlooking the bay. Alongside the servitor station personnel, there were 12 drop officers on duty. From the moment Kurz let himself into the room, none of them lived for more than 30 seconds. They took the launch permission codes with them as they died, but that didn't matter. Codes were for minions and menials. The Lord of the First could launch his drop pod blizzards with a simple gene sample override. Kurz picked up a data slate that had fallen onto the deck beside the headless body of the launch station's commander. He wiped the blood off it with the tattered hem of his cloak. Full assault drop was already pre-selected and waiting. Kurz stuck out his dark tongue and slowly, almost lasciviously, licked the cold screen of the data slate. From a shared genetic root source, one brother's gene sample was as good as another's. The slate pinged. Gene code accepted. Launch authorized. Assault swarm launch in 30 seconds. 29, 28... The Lion raised his goblet. "To the Lord of Macragge, for your welcome," he said. "To the Lord of the First, for your faith," Gilliman replied, "and to the Imperium, for its endurance." They drank, and around them, along the dressed tables of the great dining hall, their men echoed the toasts and drank. There were 1,000 guests present at the long tables. The highest-ranking ultramarines had gathered and were seated with the Dark Angels, counterparts of their specialisms, along with senior consuls, delegates from the army, the Astra Telepathica, the various fleets, the Mechanicum, and the Collegia Titanica, and representatives of all the other legions that had come to Macragge. As soon as the toasts were given, music began, and tides of servitors flooded out of the kitchen doorways to serve the first of many courses. Gilliman and the lion took their places across from each other at the principal table. Glow globes drifted in the vaults of the hall's high roof, and the tables were lined with fluttering candelabras, which combined to fill the hall with a golden light, a luminosity that reminded many present of the numinous aura of the Emperor. Three seats away from Gilliman, Titus Prato watched the lion and waited for his opportunity. He closed his eyes for a second, screening out the background noise. He was uncomfortable. There was a terrible tension that... Prato started and stood up, his eyes wide. "Great terror!" he cried. Despite the scale of the hall and the size of the company present, all talking ceased and all eyes turned to him. "Titus?" Gilliman asked, confused. Prato stared at the lion.
"I felt it," he said. "I felt it there. The surge of minds. Hundreds of minds suddenly alert with anticipation. What did you do, my lord? What did you just do?"
"I have no idea what your talk..." the lion began, but his words were cut off by the sudden chiming of multiple alert monitors, swiftly followed by the blare of the palace klaxons. Gilliman threw back his chair and stood up. "Report," he demanded. "Mass orbital launch," Augustine reported, reading off his data slate as he rose to his feet. He looked at Gilliman in disbelief. "The Dark Angel's flagship has just... it has just launched a full drop pod assault on Macragge Civitas." "What?" Gilliman cried. 400 drop pods," Augustine said. "Primary assault spread formation. This city is targeted. Planetfall in 4 minutes." "Assault swarm confirmed by all stations," Gorod reported. Gilliman's dress sword was in his fist and aimed tip first across the table at the lion. "Is this your treachery?" he snarled. "No," the lion replied, not flinching from the blade hovering at his throat. Some of his officers had drawn swords at the threat to their master, and he waved them back urgently. There were far too many weapons drawn in the hall already. "I have done nothing," the lion hissed. "I have not authorized anything." "The grid does not lie," Augustine barked. "Drop pod swarm from your ship, inbound." "You attack me?" asked Gilliman. "I swear not," the lion said. He glanced at the Dark Angels nearest him. "Stand down. Someone explain this." Holguin held out his data slate. "Signal is confirmed. The Invincible Reason has launched a drop pod assault. Impact in 3 minutes and counting."
"Condemned from their own lips," Augustine cried.
"This is a mistake," Farith Redloss shouted at the Ultramarine's first master. "A malfunction, a mislaunch."
"How exactly do you accidentally launch a drop pod assault, brother?" asked Gilliman.
"This is a malfunction," the lion insisted to Gilliman. "I swear so."
"Accident or not, the pods will not reach the city," said Gilliman. "Our shields are raised. Our batteries have full lock. We will burn them out of the sky."
The lion swallowed hard and stared directly at Gilliman.
"This is a mistake, brother. A terrible mistake, I swear it. And I implore you, spare my warriors."
"Your warriors?"
400 drop pods. A great number of battle brothers. Please, Rabute, this is a mistake. An error."
"All this time, while we talked of the future, your drop pods were loaded and ready with assault troops."
Gilliman shook his head.
"What do you suggest I do, brother? Lower the city shields?"
"Yes," replied the lion. "Drop your shields and allow the pods to make controlled landings."
2 minutes, Gorod cried. "You cannot open the city to them, lord," Augustine yelled. "It is too great a risk. You must fire and eliminate them."
"Please," said the lion, his gaze not leaving Gilliman. "I did not authorize this."
"But it is an attack force you had prepared and held in waiting."
"A precaution. You would have done the same."
"We must fire now," Gorod roared, "while they are still in optimum range. You must give the order."
"Please," said the lion one last time.
Gilliman glanced sidelong at Prato.
"Tell me," he said.
"Your brother is closed to me, but I can see enough to know that he is telling the truth. Perhaps not the whole truth, but enough of it. He did not authorize this attack. He is horrified by it."
Gilliman looked back at the lion. There was a long pause.
"Your orders, Lord," Augustine insisted. "Hold fire," said Gilliman. "Power down. Lower the shields, and let them land."
"My lord," Augustine gasped.
"Do it," Gilliman ordered.
He returned his gaze to the lion as Augustine spoke a rapid series of orders into his vox.
"Do not make me regret this, brother," Gilliman said.
In the northwest deem of the great civitas, Daemon Prytanis paused halfway through the supper he had just purchased. He was in Xanthi Market, just north of the shadows of the granaries, where the day's trade of clothing and livestock had shifted to farm produce and hot food in the late afternoon. He had bought a pastry stuffed with fish and vegetables from a trader with a clay oven, and then taken himself over to the market's skirt wall nearby so he could sit with his back resting against the foot of the wall and eat his fill. He heard a murmur of voices, a change in the tenor of the crowd around him. Something was happening. He lowered the half-eaten pastry and got to his feet, wiping the grease off his lips as he munched. Somewhere in the central part of the vast civitas, alarms were sounding. People around him were pointing at the sky. He looked up and saw immediately the multiple heat trails slicing the darkening sky high overhead. A massive drop pod assault, unmistakable. "Holy living emperor," he said out loud. The leaves of the trees above him suddenly shivered in an evening breeze that had come out of nowhere. John Grammaticus, his carry bag slung across his shoulder, was already walking quickly through the glade to find a patch of open ground where he might better see the evening sky. He had taken shelter in the ornamental parkland at the foot of the castrum's mighty Aegis wall and tried to sleep for a while, curled up on a grassy bank behind some lofty bluewoods, hoping that rest might help his mind unpack. The commotion had roused him. He'd heard it, and he'd felt it, too, felt it between his eyes like a sharp pain, the sudden agitation of hundreds of minds. It had come to him almost before the sirens had started to wail. He saw the drop pods filling the eastern sky like a meteor shower, their flame trail stretched out behind them in bright orange tongues. John wondered exactly what he was seeing. A new enemy? That seemed certain, a new threat bearing down upon them all. He remembered the far-seer's enigmatic remark,
"In 8 minutes' time, this communion will be eclipsed by another more powerful Psychana event in the city, followed by a considerable crisis. Both will divert attention from you."
This had to be that considerable crisis. Which faction was this? Which wayward brother? Which friend turned foe? John reached out with his mind. He wanted to dredge for something he could use, something that would give him an edge in the hours to come. If he knew what was about to transpire, he could decide the best place to shelter from it, or the best allies to seek out. What he got first was surprise. John blinked. At this range, he would not have expected to be able to reach specific thoughts or individual minds, but the unity of this hot reed shocked him. The warriors in those distant drop pods were surprised. The decision to launch an assault had come suddenly, without warning. John reached harder, searching for more defined information. He hit something else. It made him gasp and recoil. He'd touched a single mind, a dark thing, a midnight thing, quite unlike any mind he had ever touched before.
It was ferocious, a black, hot, repellent presence, radiating energy rather than light, like a neutron star, hyper-dense and menacing.
John didn't know what it was. John didn't want to know what it was. He just knew that it was a greater threat than the 400 drop pods and the armoured squads they contained.
"Don't let it in," he said to the evening air. "Don't let it in!" Why weren't the city batteries firing? Why weren't the orbital weapon systems lighting up? Why was this being allowed to happen? "Don't," said John. "Don't let it come here. Don't let it land."
There was a pop, a slight but noticeable change in air pressure. A breeze hushed through the blue woods again. John felt it. He smelled ozone. The void shields protecting Magna Macrag Civitas had been lowered.
"No," he cried. He turned and looked up in fury at the palace high above him, towering over the trees and the grey cliff of the Aegis Wall. "You idiots," he shouted, as if they could hear him. "Raise the shields! Raise the damn shields!"
He could hear the howling of the incoming drop pods. Two screamed low overhead, trailing streams of blue-hot ablative burn, their breaking jets beginning to fire. To either side of him, more pods flashed across the gleaming towers and high blocks of the Civitas, riding the flame plumes of their retros. The noise was deafening. John started to run. He began to sprint up the slope into the trees, heading west along the hem of the parklands towards the main castrum gate. He had to get into the palace. He had to find someone he could trust and communicate a proper warning. Hell was coming to Macrag. Something crashed into him and knocked him down. John rolled, dazed. He tested blood in his mouth. He couldn't clear his head. What? There was a weight on him, a terrible, crushing weight. A huge, mailed hand closed around his throat. Over the roar of the breaking jets and the thunder of the pods landing in open areas all across the city, John heard a voice.
"Well met," said Narek of the Word.
"Mute the damned alarms," Captain Casimir ordered.
One of the Medicaid staff turned to a console and tapped out a code. The alarm sounds and flashing lights in the quarantine corridor of the residence's Medicaid hall shut off. Through the heavy bulkheads and sealed hatches, the alarm sounding through the rest of the great palace precinct came soft and muffled. The cessation of the lights and sirens did not placate the confined Primarch. Vulcan continued to hammer his bleeding fists against the armor glass wall as he had done since the alarms first sounded. He was howling, his mouth wide in despair, like a trapped animal. The mess of plasma, blood, and half-formed tissue his fists and forearms were leaving on the glass was miserable.
"What's wrong with him?" asked the chief attending Medicaid.
"You're the damn surgeon," Casimir returned. "I thought it was a response to the alarms. Our Lord of Nocturne has clearly suffered through extremity. I thought the alarms had triggered some traumatic response."
"It wasn't the alarms," remarked a junior Medicaid nearby.
"What?" Casimir barked, turning on her.
She bowed her head.
"Sir, I simply said that it wasn't the alarms," she replied in a low voice.
"How do you know?" Casimir asked.
The young woman looked nervously at her superior, the chief attending.
I spoke out of turn," she said. "I'm sorry."
"Junior physic Patrishana is one of our most promising novices," the chief attending told Casimir. "Patrishana, please explain your comment."
The young woman nodded. She turned to her console and punched up a data review on the main lithoscopic display.
"I was monitoring the vitals of our honoured guest," she said. "Please, if you will, observe the time count indicator on this replay, Captain. I have slowed it to 1/10 speed. Although it was close, so close as to suggest cause and effect, as you'll see."
"Great Hera," Casimir whispered. "He began his agitation 3 full seconds before the alarm started, as if..."
The young woman looked up at Casimir.
"Exactly," she said, "as if his response, like the alarms, was to something else.
Casimir looked at the glass wall and the screaming figure beyond it.
What does he know? He asked.
What does he know that we don't? Treads clattering off the basalt pavers, the Land Raider growled into Barium Square just off the Via Laponis, the Cardo, or north-south, Hart Street of the Civitas. Barium Square was a broad and pleasant area, the popular haunt of scholars and academics who use the many libraries and rubicatories there. Through to the west, the cross streets afforded an excellent view of the majestic Titanicus Collegium and the even more massive Castle of the Mechanicum. In the centre of the square was a broad grass sward, like a little green island, boasting a grove of handsome grey seamwood trees and some ornamental shrubs. Scholars would sit on the benches there on summer days and talk as they ate lunch. Smoke fumed from the shrubs and the grass was scorched. The drop pod had felled two of the seamwoods when it landed and destroyed an ornamental bench. Its landing pads had cracked and dug up the pathway too. Sergeant Menius of the Ultramarines 34th Company led his squad out of the Land Raider. He fanned them out with a gesture, weapons ready. The orders had come down from the First Master. Active and duty sentry squads were to attend and secure every landing site. Reports were already flooding back from across the Civitas of sites secured. The Dark Angels squads emerging from the landing pods had immediately submitted to the 13th Legion details, handed off weapons and allowed themselves to be escorted to the holding centre at the Campus Cohortum. Some, it was reported, had apologised and begged for forgiveness from their battle brothers. There were also reports of minor property damage. No matter how carefully you tried to park a drop pod, it was not a subtle device. Menius checked the area and compared his visor data with the flow from the Land Raider's more comprehensive AuSpex array. The square was quiet. Residual vapour rose off the drop pod, which sat at an awkward angle amongst the trees. Heat residuals were much hotter on the infrared display. It was bleeding out the fury of its atmospheric entry. No contact. No life trace. "Power up," Menius voxed the Land Raider's driver. He heard the gun pods heat up behind him, and he rejoiced in the tight, metallic clatter the turret mounts made as they traversed, tracking for a target. Menius had killing power in his fists, in the hands of the battle brothers around him, and almost excessive killing power in the vehicle behind them. They wouldn't need it. Thrown, this was already quite clearly a terrible mistake, and their brothers, the Dark Angels, were freely entering submission. What was wrong with this one, then? Menius wondered. No life traces. What, a bad landing? It didn't look that bad. Summon an apothecary on standby, Menius voxed to his subaltern. There's something off here. Bolters ready, the squad closed in on the smoking pod. Hello, Menius hailed via his helm's augmenters. The evening light had gone an odd blue colour, as before a storm. Shadows had turned grey. Menius was aware that every move they made was accompanied by an over-loud sound. Every footstep, every grind of armour, every hum of power support. The city shields had not yet been refired. Menius could hear the distant chop and hum of the Thunderhawks and Storm Eagles dispatched to cover each and every landing site. He could see some of them in the distance above the rooftops, circling as they probed neighbouring districts with their stab lights. According to Vox data, his air cover was inbound and would be with him in 2 minutes. "Hold steady," Menius told his squad. "Stand and cover me." He approached the drop pod. The hatches were wide open. "Hello?" he called again. Nothing. He approached the nearest hatch and peered inside. The pod was empty. Must have been a misfire. An empty pod mislaunched. The word was the whole swarm had been due to a malfunction. "Clear the area," Menius ordered. "Secure." He turned away from the pod and scanned the square. For a moment, he thought he might have glimpsed something moving along the portico of the Tigris Library. He dismissed it as his imagination. Nothing could move so much like a shadow, so jittery, so much like a flock of crows.
"Sergeant?"
"What?" Menius asked, turning. His subaltern was facing him.
"We scanned the interior," the subaltern said.
"And?"
"The entire interior is coated with blood, Sergeant."
"What did you just say?" asked Menius.
"Blood, Sergeant. About 18 litres of it."
From the portico above Barium Square, Kurz watched the ultramarines trolling around the drop pod.
So stupid.
Kurz had targets elsewhere, and he intended to find them, but the stupid ultramarines were so terribly inviting. He'd never killed one of Gilliman's. It was enticing, even though they did have a big, bad land raider with them. The Night Haunter stood up, proud and tall, and opened his wings and his dreadful claws.
"Death,"
he murmured as a sentence. 88 seconds later, Sergeant Menius and his entire squad were dead, and the land raider was on its side and burning. Conrad Kurz had come to McCragg.